This is a Gathering Heritage project interview recorded in County Louth in Ireland.
Now, I'm speaking to Brendan McQuaid, and Brendan has retired, of course, a few years now as station master up in the Dundalk station. And I just want to talk to him a little bit about how can you become a station master, or how did you start, Brendan, in what was your first job after you left school?
Well, after I left school, I did the railway clerical exam, CIE clerical exam. I did various other exams as well, the civil service, etc. And I got the CIA exam, and I did a week in training course in Orosina and Gardiner Street in Dublin. And then I was moved to a station in Ballymote in Sligo for 12 weeks, where I got experience. The idea was that you went to a small station where you got the experience in dealing with ticket offices, signal cabins, freight off yards, lorry departments, etc.
And Bernard, at that time, did you find that interesting, even though you were very young?
Oh, it was very interesting, Harry. Yeah, because it was experience, and it wasn't all that busy. Like, to be truthful to you, the station master was a gentleman, and the signal men were very good, and you could go down and sit in the signal cabin for a couple of hours, and they'd show you all the levers, etc. You know, I had a bit of railway experience before that, because my father was the inspector in Barrack Street, and I had worked as a messenger there in 1957, 58, and 59, 60. You know, delivering letters around the town.
Yeah, so you knew where it was going to be like then.
Yeah, I had a fair idea. And then again, I was the fourth generation railway. My father worked in Barrack Street. His father worked in Barracks. That was my grandfather. And my great-grandfather worked at Monaghan Road on the Irish Northwestern Railway. So we had the experience. The fellow says I was the fourth generation, do you know? And I often think, when I got the job, you know, you were saying about that I had two maiden aunts who lived in Barrack Street, Foxes, at a small shop there. I'm sure people would know them. But when I told them, I was 18 years of age, and I told them I passed the CIE clerical exam and I was being appointed a clerk, the both of them were raptured and said, "Oh, that's fantastic, Brendan. There's a pension with that job."
It was the name of the game in those days,
yeah,
wasn't it?
Yeah, so I was just saying to myself, I often say to myself, there I was at 18 years of age, and 47 years of my life were just written off like that.
But look at you now, Brendan. You've got the pension that we're talking about.
I know that.
Like, in their own way, they were right, but it was very hard to comprehend at that age. You know?
Well, of course they were right. Harry, like, I mean, it was the name of the game in those days. Sure, you probably remember yourself, what the name of the game was: get a job and hold on to it. Like, I mean, either that or you just took the boat, you know, to England, and that was it, you know. And if you got into civil service or ESB or any of those places, you went in for life. And, you know,
so when did you come back to Dundalk, or did you go anywhere else before you came back to Dundalk?
Well,
before you came,
as I said, Harry, I was 12 weeks in Ballymote, then I came back to Dublin and I did a week practical training there, and then I moved back to Barrack Street. I was transferred after the 12 weeks course. You were allocated to a station, and like everyone else, you could be allocated to any station in the country, actually, but I was lucky enough, fortunate, there was a vacancy in Barrack Street and I was allocated to the vacancy.
And where would you have gone, Brendan? Where could you have ended up? Could you have ended up anywhere in Ireland?
Any railway station. There was people there. One was appointed to Westport. There was people appointed to Cork. There was people appointed to Longford. There was people appointed to Limerick Junction.
So it was great to get back to Dundalk.
Oh yeah, I was blessed, lucky. Like, as I said, it was just a vacancy in Barrack Street, you know, and that was it. I got back and I spent 6 years in Barrack Street. I did various.
Now, tell me a little bit about when you came back, how busy and how many was employed in Barrack Street, because in our minds, Barrack Street was just a half a dozen trains in our minds.
Yeah, well, I would imagine, Harry, that the numbers working in Barrack Street at that time, there would have been about 150 to 200, because the great Irish North, the great GNR had line to Irish North, as we called it, that was Monaghan Cavan, had closed in 61, 62, and they had to put in a substitute road service. So there was road freight services going every day out from Barrack Street. People might remember the lorries, two containers on the lorry. There was a service to Carrick, there was a service to Castle Blaney, there was a service to Monaghan, there was a service to Clonus, there was a service to Ballybacourt Hill, and there was an Irish North. There was two men involved in each of those lorries. So, I mean, there was 14 lorry men straight away. Then you had the people in the stores. The containers were loaded in North Wall with goods from Dublin, but then goods from all over the rest of the country came in, and they all had to be handled in the stores. And again, there was a big number of people in the store. And then there was, to give you an example, there was 20 people working in the office alone. There's 20 clerical people, Harry. So that'll tell you like how big it was. There was a goods agent, and there was four or five people working in the, looking after the road freight, because in addition to the road, the railhead services, as we call them, there was 15 articulated lorries. In addition to that, there was 10 tipple lorries. You know, so that was the articulated lorries. There was generally two men involved in them. There was a one-man operation came in, but it was mainly two, a driver and a helper, you know.
And Brendan, did all that, the lorries and everything down there, before that they went by train, and was that destroyed nearly the goods trains with all the lorries and that in Barrack Street?
Well, before that, the goods went by train to the Irish North, as we called it, you know, Monaghan Cam, but the freight train still operated. There was two freight trains a day from Barrack Street to the North Wall. All Clark Shoes products, all the PJ Carrolls, quite a lot of harp went on the trains. And then there was the containers coming back in. There's not empty containers. They had to be loaded and back up to Dublin again to be reloaded and come back in.
And Brendan, I lived in Hill Street, and we used to see the trains coming up from Barrack Street, of course, and we'd be the beeps and everything coming up. But did every train that came out of Barrack Street have to go up by Hill Street?
Oh yes. They went up the Barrack Street and then they propelled it back in. There was very few trains went direct from Barrack Street to Dublin. No, they went up and they went out onto the main line, then they propelled back into the station, Harry, and then they would absorb then whatever few containers there was there coming out of Belfast or whatever, and that would be trained. There was a train.
It's fascinating, isn't it, though, because we can see the difference now in it when we were growing up, like, you know, and now it's...
Yeah, I know. Like, I mean, at that time, as what times I'm talking about now, there was three liner trains. There was a 1040 and there was a 1400. And there was actually four liner trains a day from Dundalk to Dublin. You know, two during the day and then two at night. And there was, I think, three or four to Belfast. But they would, you know, Dundalk was the junction for them. You know, the trains would come in from Dublin with the goods and they'd be moved on to Belfast then.
And there was so much business in the town, of course, with the breweries and PJ Carroll's and the shoe factories. And it's incredible when you think back, Brendan, and not one of them left.
It's amazing, Harry. Like, I mean, I'll give you an example. That when the railway closed in 1957, there was actually 15, on the works on the Yardie Road, there was 1,500 people walking there. When you take 1,500 people, you know, and they all, mainly male, you know, it was nearly a male orientated, and the vast majority of them would be married people with families and what have you. And when you think of the catastrophic effect that it had when that place closed in 1957-58, you know,
the memories of them coming down on their bikes at dinner time past the Garda station, round by the Friary Church.
If you didn't get across the road before they came, you'd stand there for 10 minutes.
And then from the shoe factory, they were coming in the other direction.
It was the same. I was reared in Hyde Park, and when we got out of CBS, we tried to get down to what was McCann's Banana Store, as we called it, to get across. Because if you didn't get across ahead of the shoe factory closing for lunch, you'd stand there for 10 minutes, you know. They used to come up there six abreast.
The thing that every time I see a photograph of the old Hallidays down in Key Street and the thousands of bikes and everything along, how they knew where their bikes was, and there was no bikes lifted.
No, there wasn't really. I don't know I don't know how they knew.
They didn't have locks or anything on them.
No, it was just everything. Sure, I mean, like the Grace, remember, like, I'm sure you were the same, Harry, your front door at home. The key was in the front door. Yeah. You know, the key was in the front door all day long, so... Anybody, you just turn and there's no...
When you then came back to Dundalk, and who was the, it was Mr. McGivern was the station master then?
No, well, when I came back to Dundalk, as I say, I came back to Barrack Street. Ben Walsh from Ann Street was the goods agent, and he retired then, and he was succeeded by Tommy McAvoy from the Carrick Road. Late Tommy, he passed away there a few months ago. And Tony Ryan, actually, from the Point Road, he was the station master at the station. And then in 1968, as I said, Davy McCarroll and myself, we moved to Dublin to help book the trains for the summer period, you know, in the ticket office. And when we came back to Dundalk, then Davy came back to the passenger station dealing with the customs, and I was back to Barrack Street. And then in 1969, I was moved to Dublin again for the summer. And when I came back that time, then I was into the parcel office, because the man that had been there had passed away. So that was it. I was in the parcel office, and that was a complete change from Barrack Street.
Was that a much harder job or an easier job?
It was an unusual job, in the sense that you dealt with all livestock. Like, I mean, I remember Peter Drumgool, the lorry driver, he used to collect during this time of the year the dear old chicks melon bank hatcheries in Cavan. And you'd be talking about 400 or 500 boxes of them, with 6 chickens in each box. So you can imagine the noise.
There's wee chickens, but the boxes must have been only wee small boxes.
Well, there were 6, there were the old chicks, yeah. The boxes were quite, and they were going to all over the country. Jack Mullen from Newry, the dog trainer, the greyhounds used to come in to him to be serviced. You know, he had dogs in Newry. Jack Mullen was a great doggy man.
Would greyhounds come up in the drain?
Oh yeah, there was a dog box. There was a dog box they put into the dog box.
So they were coming up to the stud here?
Yeah, the stud in Newry. Jack Mullen would come up and collect them, yeah. And then he'd come back a few days later when the job was done, and he'd send them
probably
away.
Probably a joke there somewhere.
There is. Harry O'Donoghue, you might know Harry.
Oh, Harry.
Harry used to send his pups, they used to go by train to London. On the thing, he like down to go away on the 4:45 train to be in Dublin at 6 o'clock, to be out over on the night the boat at 8:45 out of Dunleary, and to be in London at 6 o'clock the next morning, you know, and
ready for action.
Yeah, and George Smale from Ravensdale, he had a great mushroom place out. He used to send mushrooms to the market in London and in Glasgow every day, and they went via Belfast. They went away in the 10 o'clock train from here, and they'd be in Belfast, and they'd be on the boat out, and they'd be in Glasgow that evening.
And Brendan, did you get so used to all of those different things? Because you keep saying that you nearly knew the times that the chickens were coming and the dogs were coming and whatever.
Yeah, well, I mean, Peter Drumgool, you know, he arrived into the station at 7:15 every evening. You know, he also collected the mails. So he was walking to a rota, like he collected the mails in Monaghan and at the different post offices along the way, you know. And he walked into a road, he'd be in about 7:15, and the mails would go away then. There was a mails would go away on the train that night, you know, as well, with the chickens.
Now, along with that, of course, there was the cinema. Tell me a bit about the cinema.
Yeah, well, that was at the Adelphi and the Magnet. All their films used to come in by train. They'd be in a steel box, you know, and the person from the Magnet, I can't recall now who they were.
I remember a man called Philly Morgan, and he worked in Park Street Picture House, going up in his bicycle to collect them up there.
Yeah, that would be true enough. Yeah, they come in the metal box, and they come in the day, and they'd be shown. They generally think cinemas that time they showed a film for three days. You know, so they changed the program 3 days: Monday to Wednesday, and Wednesday to Saturday, and then they had some kind of a court and couples special on a Sunday night. I think they used to be old
with the double seats.
Yeah. The double seats, yeah. Yeah. But then when they'd be on Thursday morning, the lads would arrive up with the film and send it away on the train, away back to whoever they were, MGM or whoever it was in Dublin, you know. That was it.
And there was, of course, Brendan, little things went on in the station, and I wonder, do the station masters know about it? My poor father, Lord of mercy him, and his kick every year was he would get, when he'd have his holidays, he would get free passes for to take us up to Dublin for the day. And he used to pray nearly the night before that Joe Connolly would be the man collecting the tickets, because Joe would give him a wink and he would be able to get without tickets being clicked. Did you know about these things happening, Brendan?
Well, everybody did. Well, I did anyway, you know. Joe Connolly was...
Did you have to
man.
Do it?
No, Joe was... Well, my father had to do it, like, you know, with uniform, you know. And Joe Connolly was a decent man, you know. You lived in the Carrick Road there. Yeah. Noel's father and Sean's father. But, yeah.
And there was... Were they fellas like Joe? Who was the... Was Bob Cosgrove, was he a ticket collector up there?
No, Bob was the station foreman. There was three stations, right. Bob Cosgrove and Desi Woods and... Andy Curran from out.
So would they were above, would they were under you?
Oh yeah, they would be the they were the station foreman. They dealt with all the traffic staff. They didn't deal with the local drivers. That was a separate separate place, you know. They had separate department. Tommy Curran dealt with them, you know. He dealt with them. But then when I was appointed station master in 1988, they combined the whole, they combined the locomotive and the traffic into one. So I had responsibility for that, the whole, the drivers as well.
Right. Well, tell me how you became, what were you when, before you became station master?
Well, as I said, I was working in the parcel office, and after I came back, and then in 1974, Desi Casey resigned. He took up his position as Irish Secretary of the Transport Salaried Staffs Association, the union for clerical and on the railways in Dublin. And his job became vacant in Barrack Street, and I applied for it and I got it. And I was there operating the lorries. I was a lorry operating manager there from 1974 until 1988, and then Stephen McGivern retired and his job was advertised, and I applied for it and I got it.
Were you the favourite, or were you surprised you got it? Where did you have to go for the interviews?
Well, I don't know. I don't know how many were in for it. It wasn't such a big attractive job for somebody coming up from the country, Harry, because as you mentioned earlier, there was no house for the job. So that if you had somebody, a person coming up perhaps in the 40s or 50s, and they heard there was no house with the job, they changed their mind. I know that happened with when Stephen McGivern was appointed, that somebody else had was actually nominated for the job, but when he heard there was no house, he declined. He said he didn't want the job. So that was it. No, I don't know how many were in for the job, but I suppose I was, because I knew, as I said, I had the experience, and then...
But Stephen was there for a good many years, wasn't he?
I think Stephen Whitley, see, I went to parcel office. Stephen was there from about 63, 64 until 88. Mm. Yeah, he was, yeah, yeah, mm. He was.
And was it a job you always wanted to get, you know, or was that the pinnacle of your
job?
Well,
I suppose it was, Harry. It was, as I said to you, I was the fourth generation railway person in my family. My father was the inspector in Barrack Street, and his father was a train yard in Barrack Street, and that was my grandfather. And my great-grandfather was actually station foreman in Monaghan Road and Irish North Western Railways back in the 1860s. You know, so I was the fourth generation, so it was. And as well as that, I was the first Dundalk person to ever be appointed station master, and the station master's there from 1850.
Where was Stephen from?
Stephen was RD. Yeah, I'm not sure where Tony Ryan was, from somewhere in the north, but I don't know where. But.
And it came with a lovely uniform.
Ah, that was a nice uniform, yeah, 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 I know.
I'd love to be a station man. Imagine getting up and putting that lovely uniform and everything on you.
Yeah, I know. you had to wear the cap as well, you know.
Was there good station masters? I don't mean good in a bad way, or good or bad way. I mean, was there some of them more stricter than you were when you... Because you're always... I know you a long time, Brendan, and to me, you're a very placid man. Did you use that or had you to be very strict at times?
No, I didn't have never had any industrial relations problems at all. I got on very well with the staff, actually, you know, they whatever you asked them to do. I didn't go around bossing people or anything. You just asked them and you'd have a meeting and we'd say we'll do this and we'd do that, and they'd do it, it'd fall in line. You know, I got on very well with the staff, yeah.
Was it during your time or Stephen's time that it was changed from Dundalk Station to Clark Station?
That was in Stephen's time. That was in coincide with the East, the 50th anniversary of the 1916 Rising Irish. CIE is the where it then. Renamed all the stations around the country after the leaders of the
Have you ever heard the station been called Clark Station?
Have I? Yeah.
I mean, with the public. I would never, ever say Clark Station.
No. Not Dundalk people wouldn't refer to it. No, I have never heard it referred to as Clark Station, no. It's Dundalk.
Yet you'll call it Connolly Station and Pierce Station.
Yeah, it's amazing, isn't it? Yeah. But it's the same with Drogheda. Like, Drogheda's McBride Station. Now, how many people know that? Like, do you know? Yeah. No, people wouldn't know. It's just the station and that's it, you know.
And Brendan, when did you decide that you'd like to do, was it in a bad way when you took over, and I mean cleaning wise and paint wise and floor wise, when you took over from Stephen, what was it like?
Yeah, well, it was in a bad enough situation, Harry. At that time there was trouble in the troubles were going on in the north, and quite a lot of them were going up by train, and they had put up security cameras all along the gangway to photograph the people, and they had to put up screens to black it out. So that was very bad. No, we just took it on board as we spoke to the chaps, and CIE started a thing called the Station Improvement Scheme, you know, and allocated funding to it, and then they had the station awards every year. So we said, yeah, we'll have a go at that, you know.
Yeah, because this was going on other stations before you decided. It wasn't something you just thought of. You knew it was going on.
Well, it was going on at other stations. Yeah, it was, because other stations were getting the best station, the most improved station, etc. But We were the first to, we did have a few innovative things, like, for instance, we were the first with a museum. I think we were one of the few rail stations with a museum. And the painting and the floral decorations and the hanging baskets, you know, they were all probably, yeah, they were innovative, if you like, Harry, you know.
The museum is a lovely place, because every time I go up there, you're looking and you'll come across, it was the original Larry O'Hagan old photographs up there, wasn't it?
Yeah, it is. That was originally a bar, actually. That was a buffet bar. And the buffet bar, it was open on a Sunday, when the time when you had to be a bona fide traveller to get drink. And there used to be a lot of people would come up and they'd buy a ticket to Dublin
and go down
and have a few scoops and then go back up and say if I missed the train and get the money back again.
Are you serious?
Oh, yeah, that went on. Oh, and there was people travel to Dublin that and the train, just because it was very difficult to get a drink that time. You know, the pubs didn't open, you know.
And, Brennan, we know the trains now to Dublin are used an awful lot for passengers going up and down to work. I myself went up and down for 4 years way back. Excuse me. Pardon me. And is there more trains running now than there used to be back in your day or less?
There'll be more trains now, Harry. They're very, very frequent service now, you know. I mean, you get trains all day long, you know, from the first one, I think it's 10 to 6 in the morning, you know. So, there are more trains, yeah.
It is something, there's something magic about a train, and I know, pardon me, sorry about that, I know, Brendan, that you are very much involved also in the steam trains, and we could talk about that maybe some other time, but just for a minute or so, just talk to me about your love of steam trains. There's magic in them, isn't there?
Oh, there is, yeah. Well, what gave rise to the whole, our love of the trains, Harry, was in 1999, celebrated 150 years of trains in Dundalk. And the RPSI, as it was, they brought two steam trains to Dundalk, you know, one from Belfast and one from Dublin, with people, and they offered services. You know, we had excursions from the Belfast one went on to Drogheda and back, and the Dublin one went on to Points Pass and back. And after that, then there was we set up a committee. Des Casey was chairman of it, and there were all retired railway people, and there was a few, say, David McArdle came on board as well. They decided to continue to operate the service, you know, and we dealt with the East Belfast Heritage Society, a group that was set up in East Belfast with Harland and Wolff, redundancies in Harland and Wolff. A lot of the apprentices were made redundant, and the East Belfast Heritage Society was set up and attract cross-border funding, attract EU funding. They had to get involved with a cross-border group. And they got in touch with us, and we got together on them, and we did various projects. We went up, you know, and one of the big projects was, if you remember, locomotive 131 that was used to be on the plinth at Dundalk, and it was moved to Mallow and to the historical society down there, and then they went belly up, and the local.
And where is it now?
It's in Whitehead, actually. We sourced it. Greg Ryan, who was the heritage officer with CIE. He came and he sourced all the things, and a lot of the parts were brought to Dublin and then to Belfast, and we were looking for grants. We were looking, that was going to be our big project. We were looking for a grant from the EU, but there had been some problem. It was under EU funding, and it was but they had given, I don't know where, funds to what they called ambulatory groups, and they were abused in the sense that minibuses were bought instead of doing so. They ceased giving grants to anything with wheels. The EU wouldn't give grants. So 131 lay down in Belfast and in Dublin, and it's there for you. But the Railway Preservation Society in Northern Ireland have it, and they restored it, and it was out. It can operate in the six counties, but it can't cross the border at the moment. They have to get clearance from the railway security people to operate the train.
And do you think, will you ever get permission to do it?
Well, we are hoping we will, and when we do, we are going to have a bit of a party at the station for it, because it was symbolic with Dundalk. You know, it was there for years, you know, and we said we'd see, maybe get something, have a bit of reception up at the station when it arrived, you know.
Most people that I would be interviewing and talking about jobs, including my own jobs, that for retiring, that it must be great to retire and stop. But you have a love of your job. It's coming across even talking to you. Everything you've done, would you change anything in if you had a choice again?
You mean what?
To get involved with CAE and the trains and everything like that.
Well, sometimes you think about what might have been, Harry. You know, but I think in the main, I have to say, yeah, I enjoyed my 42 years on the railway. I really had a good time. I made loads of friends, and I enjoyed the job. You know, I was, as I say, the steam was in the blood. You know, fourth generation, and yeah, that was it. I don't think I think with hindsight, or foresight, or hindsight, whatever, I was happy that I got what I did, you know.
Yeah. And do you think of it often?
Of
just the years that you spent up there, and maybe things that would happen. Did it come back to you if you're sitting here in the house on your own?
I do occasionally, Harry. As you know, there was a lot of trouble on the railway line. I was identified, I think, as a prime target, you know, and I was subject. And I mean, I often think about the times, a rugby international would be on in Dublin, you know, and there'd be four or five specials out of Belfast, and they'd be coming down the line, and when the first train maybe hit Dunleer, you'd get a phone call to say there was a bomb on the railway line, like killing the Sigurd Bridge or somewhere. And you know, the train's just, that was it, the terminator and dock, and you'd have hundreds of people getting off the train, and then you'd have a train in Dunleer because he was blocked in Dunleer, and you'd have one in Drogheda, and we had to organise buses and everything. And I often sit here thinking about that time, you know, like that it was, I think and I think about the good days as well, Harry, you know, like that we had some great days on the railway, you know, we had.
I suppose I'm looking in the lovely garden that you have down here, plenty of flowers, not like my garden, I can tell you. Were you into flowers and all of that kind of thing? Is that what gave you the love of doing it above at the station?
Yeah, well, again, it was in the blood, the garden, the love of the garden and the love of flowers was in the blood. My father won at Dundalk Show, he won the cup for the best home small holder several years. I can't think of the name of the trophy, but it's there, you know. And he used to have entries in the Cooley Agricultural Show as well, and he won prizes there, you know. And then my brother, he was the same. So yeah, I think it's just the love of the garden, the fresh air, and getting out there. You know,
it was. I remember taking visitors when they'd come home to the house. Up just to have a look at the station, you know, and I think it's a lovely way for to remember you about Brendan, ending up our talk with you now, that I know you're very, very much appreciated in the town for what you did to the station. And when the station is mentioned, any time, it's always Brendan McQuaid is mentioned. And that's nice to have.
That's nice to hear. Yeah. Harry, thank you very much. No. I appreciate that.
Listen to lots more epic interviews at gatheringheritage.com.